Agenda item number five, report and possible discussion on threatened and endangered species engagement evaluation methodology by Tiffany Malzahn, Environmental and Compliance Manager. Tiffany.
For those of you who've been on the board a while, you've heard me discuss a threatened and endangered mussels in the basin or the potential for them for quite some time. And we are currently in a period of definite expanded U.S. Fish and Wildlife attention on private lands, extending their historical focus from just dealing with federal lands. And what we have seen in the last 8 to 10 years is that interest has greatly expanded across the state of Texas. And additionally, starting about 2014, they really started to get interested in aquatic species. And that was some of what necessitated us going down the path of working on freshwater mussels and negotiating that candidate conservation agreement with assurances. But through that process, you know, we received comments from the board a couple times of, gee, this could be limitless. How many species will we have to deal with? Things like that. So basically, to respond to that, we have worked and developed an assessment methodology to determine when BRA should engage in a species-specific issue or when we should not. And basically, as our population continues to grow, I don't think this is going to be a situation that gets less. So we're hoping to narrow down using this methodology to items that really have, and species that really have the potential to impact our core business. Can they impact our exercise of our water rights? Will they impact our existing properties and easements or our future water supply projects? There are a lot of species out there that may affect us during construction. Allen's Creek will be a prime example. We'll have to deal with Houston toad and whooping cranes and migratory birds. But none of that do we need to put a significant investment of time and effort into other than what it takes to receive the federal permits. But there are some species out there where it is to our benefit to spend some time and effort studying and contributing to the general knowledge base and really learning how many of those species or how many of the organisms are out there. There's a very low bar that U.S. Fish and Wildlife has to meet to put something on the threatened and endangered list, and oftentimes that process is very well utilized as an effective tool by environmental action groups to effectuate the change in human behavior that they wish to see, because the Endangered Species Act is such a powerful regulation. So as we developed this methodology and worked through a way, how do we decide what BRA should engage in or not? We came up with an evaluation matrix that goes through 18 different metrics on each species. And what we will do is annually we're going to run this assessment. We will add any new species that have popped up on Parks and Wildlife or U.S. Fish and Wildlife databases. And if there's been any significant change to the existing status of the species or knowledge base about the species. And each metric gets assessed on a scale of 1 to 5. And with the 5 being the worst case scenario for BRA, 1 is not an issue. And we kind of put our dividing line for additional look and work at about 3.5. Once we identify a species at 3.5, we'll sit down and we'll make some recommendations for further engagement. That may just be continuing to monitor the species process in the federal or the state threatened and endangered processes. May, depending on what we know about the species, recommend the need for a special study where we feel it's significantly in BRA's benefit to go out and contribute to the base knowledge on the species. Another option may be we wrote our candidate conservation agreement with assurances in such a way that freshwater mussels we know are going to continue to be an issue and we expect to see more mussels come up, we can easily amend that CCA to address those mussels. Same with a lot of the fish that we know are out there on the list in our basin, and we can easily roll those into the CCAA. What we'll do is once we've completed our analysis, we plan to present that to the Risk Management Committee annually for further consideration, and then if warranted, we'll bring those issues up to the board. Our first evaluation we went ahead and ran, we evaluated a little over 1,200 species out of the Parks and Wildlife Rare Threatened and Endangered database and several U.S. Fish and Wildlife work plans species list. Out of that analysis, we came up with three species that exceeded 3.5 or greater on points, and that's the Brazos water snake, the Texas fondfoot, and the Balcony spike. The bottom two are the freshwater mussels that we have already engaged on and developed the candidate conservation agreement with assurances. So the Brazos water snake is the final species out there that we think is worthy of BRA spending some time and effort on for the moment. Just to give you a few statistics out of that evaluation, really, for the most part, we're talking probably about that wedge of the pie that we would ever have to look at. Those are the true aquatics and the things that are going to be impacted by our use of water and our exercise of water rights, or that have the potential to be impacted. And then again, one of the things we really looked at is there's a very narrow wedge of species that only are known to occur in the Brazos Basin. So, and that's where the Brazos water snake and the Balcony spike certainly fall in that little wedge. And overall, one of the key things that they look at, especially when they're dealing with a lot of the terrestrials, is where is the breeding occurring. Of all the species evaluated, we have a very low number of species that use the Brazos Basin as breeding habitat, and same for overlap with our water supply systems easements. And that is, of all the species we evaluated, that is a summary of where the scores came out. So even going forward, if something significant happened in those, it's still a very small number that we would ever hopefully have to consider. And we think we have a pretty comprehensive list. It's the federal process is certainly anyone in the state or the country, for that matter, can make a petition on any species with very little knowledge. So there may be some things that come up in the future we didn't predict in this, but we tried to be very comprehensive in coming up with a metric to determine when we move forward on something and which species we don't engage on.
I recognize that all of the authorities have different, you know, we're water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another electricity, etc. So who's out there that's your partner with? Surely somebody has a methodology in place. I mean, are you recreating a system for the BRA that somebody else already has to determine which one we should focus on?
No, I don't think so. I will say that the freshwater mussel issue, I think, kind of was a little bit of a sucker punch for most of us. I am not aware of any of the other river authorities that have gone through a ranking scenario like this. There are definitely, and we did use, there's these the NatureServe Explorer Index, where they do rank species on level of criticality and level of basically global status and who they think is threatened, who's not. We did work those metrics into ours, but I am not aware of any other river authority, and we do meet fairly frequently with GBRA, LCRA, and TRA, at least because we're all kind of in the same area and battle some of the same species that I've not heard, and honestly didn't specifically let them know we were doing this either. But I don't think that I have seen anyone else. Everyone kind of takes it on a species by species basis. This, I'm hoping, will give us a little early warning before it's too late and something's already in the federal process, that we at least know what's coming. But no, I'm not aware of anyone else having done anything to evaluate species on this level.
I know it's good to be proactive and starting to evaluate what you think might be the next thing coming up the pike, but we could put money forward to studying something, mm-hmm. but then other outside entities could say it's the mosquito, and then all of a sudden we're to the mosquito. I mean, how, like, what value, how important is our study going to be, and our money's going to the study, if, or for anything that you decide is a priority?
The the value is having data to defend ourselves. Usually, gathering the data takes an extensive amount of time. If we wait till it's already working through the federal system, we probably don't have the time to generate the data we would need to defend. I'll use the water snake as an example, and I'm given a spoiler alert for the next one. Texas Parks and Wildlife started to have a discussion, and they brought in universities, other state researchers across the state to work on the Brazos water snake. And right now there's really only one university that's doing a lot of significant work. But throughout that discussion, why is the Brazos water snake population declining? Universally, the answer was because there's Possum Kingdom, Lake Granbury, and Lake Whitney. The population didn't start to decline till 1990. Those reservoirs had all been in place for a significant amount of time before that without any impact to the population. However, things we do know is snake fungal disease came to the region at about that time, and that really impacts some of their behavior and makes them more prone to predation by other species because they don't necessarily have as good a survival instincts as they would. We've also seen fire ants reach that part of the basin at the time. So there's other potential impactors out there, but they're not necessarily being looked at, and we don't have necessarily some of the data to defend that. Now, last summer, to plan for the study that I was going to ask for some funding for, in my next agenda item, we did some preliminary work and found that snake fungal disease was occurring at 44% in the species, in the number of specimens we caught, whereas the previously reported occurrence was about 27%. So trying to get some of that data, no one else is going to go out and get it. So it's that snake is going to be something that has the potential to impact our water supply. And that's really what we focused our metrics on. Is it going to have the potential to impact how we use our water? You're right, there's always the potential for something else to come up. But on these, hopefully we have identified the things that have the potential to impact our water. Mosquito or a plant, most of the fish aren't going to impact our ability to use our water supply. So we're really trying to hone in and not trying to go chase every species. And honestly, as a biologist, the Endangered Species Act and the way it's written, I don't agree with, because you're trying to keep something meant to change static, but no one really cares about my opinion when it comes to federal rules and regulations. And so there is always a potential something comes up. There's a potential that it could divert. It is a highly fluid movement, but we're trying to identify the things and put the BRA in the best stead to defend itself, especially against claims against our water supply, which is that is the very popular narrative right this minute, is water use, dams, reservoirs, are the cause for most of our whales in the aquatic system. Yes, sir.
Well, my opinion is basically everything is white. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you're trying to make sure that BRA or anything that we're doing is impacting any kind of species. Mm-hmm. But say like a water snake, if it were to disappear completely, what kind of impact would you know?
We can't answer that question.
I mean,
we don't have.
Is it a predator?
Yeah, we're not the right expertise level of ecologists to understand if you took one species out of the eco web, what that would do to the entire environment. One would think that it would be very negative, but where the BRA is, as far as these type of species are concerned, is that Tiffany's told you in the past that we're in a very litigious world. And the folks that are looking out for the snake per se will use the Endangered Species Act on their side. And the way the world turns right now, if the science isn't collected to help justify whether we need to go left or we need to go right, then we're going to find ourselves in a position of not being able to fight for our water supply, whether where the movement's going is right or wrong. So it's where I was with the mussels. If we don't have the science, if we don't have the data, we can't argue and fight for our water, or we can't argue and fight for the snake. because we just don't have the data. So that's really the process that we're looking at. Tiffany brought this to me months and months ago to our risk management team, and my response was the same as the chairman's. Okay, gee whiz, we just spent a lot of money on mussels. Now we're going to spend a lot of money on snakes. Go back and look at everything that's coming so this doesn't become the species of the month to our board of directors that we're going and asking for all this money. So I think her staff has done a really unique look. We were the first river authority to do a CCAA. Others are falling in line. And I think when other river authorities see this, they'll come sit down with Tiffany because she is a very well-respected environmental expert in the river authority world. And I think they'll come sit down with her and begin to look at what her staff have put together and use something like this to determine when do you spend money and when do you not spend money. But to me, it's about if you find yourself in a vulnerability and you have to either protect the snake or the water, the best way to do it is with the science.
And the science will help us also know there's always the potential, and it's scary with any investigation, whether it's water quality monitoring. We may learn something we don't like in this, but at least we see it coming and we can determine a solution and what we need to do to remedy that if there is an impact. So not having data, Parks and Wildlife wants to embark on writing a conservation plan, but they don't understand the species. So how effective can a conservation plan be when you don't need what the species needs to survive? So they're gonna spend some money on a nice report that's probably not gonna be effective at bringing the species back to its former glory. Yes,
sir. And it's very important to follow the science. I think we've been through that, certainly, but I'm just wondering if there's a fungal aspect or a medical aspect to this, is there any possibility, particularly in terms of just figuring out what the narrative is or what the science is, maybe reaching out to the vet school at A&M to ask for some help on that? And if you've got a fungus among us or whatever it is that's killing these snakes, then maybe that's a route to take, and that could also help in other areas.
Certainly something we can look into. I am not aware of any treatment for wild snakes for this particular fungal disease. We have been submitting some of our swabs to a professor at Texas State University who's been doing the actual testing for us, thankfully. But that's certainly an avenue we can add and look to, is a discussion of, is there anything that can be done, and what would it take to get that solution delivered out to the snake population. I'm just not aware that anyone has identified a cure for snake fungal disease.
Does it kill them or just slow them down?
In and of itself, I'm not aware that it kills them, but it does alter their behavior, so they sun more, it interferes with their temperature regulation, and so they're basically kind of dulls their survival instincts. They stay out and they sun more, so then they're more vulnerable to other predators that will eat them versus going back in their, they live in mostly in the cobbles and in the river, and so it does impact their behavior in a way that makes them more prone to being predated upon.
I'd just like to comment. I am glad to hear that the BRA is aware of and is interested in the preservation of those species. Personally, I have witnessed the death of a pristine creek, and we have no horned lizards, we have no striped lizards, we have no quail, and it just keeps going. I've never seen one of these little snakes that you're talking about, but I would like to protect them if they can be. And I'm glad that the BRA is interested in those things and is taking efforts to do those things.